This episode is brought to you in part by SunsetLakeCBD.com. It is our one-stop shop for everything CBD. Sunset Lake CBD has gummies. They have tinctures that are great for sleeping. At least they've been helping me sleep. They have pre-rolls. They have smalls. They have buds. They have CBD-embedded, infused coffee. Which is fantastic. They also have CBD infused fudge, which is really great too. Sometimes too great for those of us with a bit of a sweet tooth. They also have salves that great for muscle aches with arnica, and I found it actually helpful for my eczema. And they have a lotion now that they have just introduced. Also fantastic for you if you want to hydrate your skin. Check it out, SunsetLakeCBD.com. They are a great company. They're a movement supporter. A bunch of burners up outside of Burlington. Their company is mostly employee owned. They have $15 minimum wage. They use integrated pest management, no pesticides, and 100% organic. And they also document the quality of their CBD. They have third-party testers come in and test the stuff, and so you know what you're getting when you go to SunsetLakeCBD.com. And they also just want to remind you, support those St. Vincent nurses in Worcester. We'll put a link to a donation page. They're still on strike, 13 weeks now, and Sunset Lake donated $2,500 to their strike fund, so that those folks can stay out there as this big Dallas-based conglomerate tries to hire scabs. But head over to SunsetLakeCBD.com right now, and Left is Best will get you 20% off. One word, Left is Best, 20% off, SunsetLakeCBD.com. Also, this episode of The Majority Report brought to you by the civic engagement podcast Future Hindsight. Join host Mila Atmos this week as she talks to Mark Rank, a poverty expert and the author of Poorly Understood: What America Gets Wrong About Poverty. Listen in to learn how American poverty is like a game of musical chairs and to understand the systemic factors keeping Americans poor. It is available wherever you get your podcasts, or just go to futurehindsight.com. And now for this show.
The Majority Report with Sam. Where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, June 4th, 2021. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Heather Parton, columnist at Salon.com, proprietor of the blog Hullabaloo, will be joining us. And Andrew Callahan, the creator behind All Gas, No Brakes, will be joining us in the second half of the program. Meanwhile, Joe Biden's bipartisan fetish continues, and it's gross.
Don't kink shame.
I'm sorry. And the Senate parliamentarian now says Democrats have only one more bite at the reconciliation apple before April of 2022. And that's a little bit close to the election of 2022. Dems tee up this June as the month of failure. Anthony Fauci asked Beijing for medical records of those Wuhan lab workers who got ill in December of 2019. Meanwhile, British study, the Delta COVID variant, the one that's been spreading in India, 50% more transmittable, nearly three times more virulent, creates more breakthrough infections, Then the B117 variant. Meanwhile, DOJ announces it's going to get serious with ransomware. The FBI is investigating Postmaster Louis DeJoy. Speaking of joy. And jobs numbers underwhelm, however. But the good news is wages creeping up. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It is Friday. Thus, you will notice if you are watching this program, I am wearing my soft collared shirt as I do on Fridays.
I was going to say, is that a new polo?
It is a new old one. I can't find the other one. And so
It's maroon. I like it.
Is this maroon?
I think so.
It started out as sort of like a blue. I don't know.
Yikes.
Yeah. You know, I don't, if I find a shirt I like, I don't stop wearing it. Okay. My son is actually the same way, that I've just realized that too, where I'm like, dude, you can't wear that sweatshirt 4 days in a row. He's like, you do. I was like,
practice what you preach, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or you're going to be as a do as I say, not as I do kind of parent.
I try. Yeah, I try. Of course. Of course. Emma Vigeland here on Casual Friday. Let's get right into this. We got to do this. A little bit of a long clip, but I mean, let's face it. We're living with President Joe Manchin now. And
Vice President Kristen Sinema.
Exactly. And so when Joe Manchin
Secretary
speaks.
Secretary of the Treasury, parliamentarian.
Digby and I are going to get into this. There is... there's a lot of moving pieces. We have some, Digby and I have some very highly speculative ideas about what's going on here. But here is Joe Manchin. Boy, oh boy, talk about not being able to give up the ghost. Here's Joe Manchin. He just can't accept the fact that they're just not that into him. Here he is, being questioned by Manu Raju, on CNN about, you know, are you going to keep pursuing this bipartisanship even after the January 6th commission?
What evidence do you have that Mitch McConnell wants to work with? Because last week he blocked a commission bill, and he could have, and you saying that he will wants to work
that
with
them. Dead either. I'm not saying that one's dead either. You know, I was very disappointed. I think it was wrong what he did. And I've said that. He knows how I feel about that. Mm-hmm. And they looked at it truly as a political. I did not look at political from that standpoint. I looked as our country coming back together. Mm-hmm. It was totally everything they asked for. It was totally bipartisan. I think Nancy Pelosi was very gracious in what she had offered, mm-hmm. basically making it totally bipartisan. Chuck Schumer said, okay, I'll do the same. They were able to, if come to a disagreement, they were able to have the same staffing levels. Everything was done in the most bipartisan way. And for him...
They blocked it because of the filibuster.
Well, one person blocked it on that. But the bottom line is, we have seven people, six that voted, seven would. We need three more. Let's give it another shot.
I mean, so you can say you'll never produce a 60-vote threshold.
Basically, we're going to make the place work. We're going to make the
place. You're not taking that off the table, then.
We're making it work. We're going to make the place
work. You're not taking reducing the 60-vote threshold off the table.
We're going to make the place work. I don't know what else I can tell you. Mm-hmm. And you can't make it worse work unless the minority has input. Mm-hmm. You can't disregard a person that's not in the majority. Mm-hmm. The Senate was never designed that way. And I've said this, if you want to know the workings of the Senate, why do we have two senators for every state, small and large? What did our founding fathers, what were they thinking of? Mm-hmm. They wanted the participation for the smaller, the minority. And a state back then of Delaware or Rhode Island was a very small state compared to New York and Virginia. So he wanted that input, and we want that input. We'll make it work.
I know you got to go in 1 second, but you know you're also just in the center of so many issues in Washington. 100%. One of the issues is you're working on trying to get a voting rights bill passed with Lisa Murkowski. Let me finish the question. There's no sign that there's actually going to be 60 votes to get that done. Some of your Democratic colleagues say Joe Manchin should agree for an exemption, allow voting rights to pass on a simple majority, change the Senate's filibuster rules to do that. Would you be open to that?
I asked everybody, how well did the 2013 nuclear option work when in 2017 they came back and took it off the Supreme Court? That's mm-hmm. all. What goes around comes around. Mm-hmm. So let's work together. That's fine.
In other words, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, and fine. Fine. You know what else the founding fathers did not do?
Allow for elections of senators?
Well, they also, the founding fathers did not want senators elected. But you know what they did also do is not put in a filibuster.
Yeah.
The filibuster has nothing to do with the founding fathers. This is really, it is so aggravating. And, well, you know, Digby and I and Emma, we will talk about our various theories as to what the various players want in this. And I think this new report about what the parliamentarian has ruled over the past couple of days is also playing into this as well. We will get to all of this, but it's simply infuriating. And I don't think there's much leverage that anybody has with Joe Manchin.
Well, he decides one day he's going to take an op-ed out in the Washington Post saying he will never, ever make any adjustments to the filibuster. And there he was with Manu Raju, who I think said on Twitter in response to this that he noted that he repeatedly would not take the bait on saying that he would never adjust the filibuster. So, like, the guy is just going where the wind goes on this. And that's why I think the article in the Daily Beast about how Schumer is going to essentially put up as many bills as they can in June, because they're all going to fail, creating some sort of environment that allows for a more, you know,
A reluctant Joe Manchin.
Yes, Manchin. It pushes Joe Manchin in the direction that the party wants. I mean, Sinema, who the hell knows?
We'll see. All right. Well, we'll talk more about this in just a moment when we talk to Heather Parton. We'll be right back. Folks, here we go. All right. This one's a little bit better. You know, it's Hello Tushy. I gotta brace myself a little bit.
You do, yeah. It's a big wind
look,
up.
We all know what's on the horizon, right? Emma, what is coming up?
The summer.
Gosh, Father's Day!
Oh, right.
Father's Day. Well, what are you gonna get your dad this year? Have you thought about it?
Mm-hmm.
Fishing gear? He doesn't fish.
Well.
Yeah. Gift cards? No. Mm-mm. That's not...
It's not personal.
You know what?
I know it's personal.
Yes. Your dad deserves something that's going to last him a lifetime of flushes. Refresh your gift game and, well, get your dad a Hello Tushy. Yes. To bring your dad into the future. I bet you your father, if you asked him, I mean, I don't know if you want to have this conversation, but I bet you say, like, have you ever contemplated getting a bidet? He would say, you know what? I probably thought about it, but I wasn't going to make that type of investment. Well, Hello Tushy 3.0, modern bidet attachment. It is stylish. It is eco-friendly. It is super easy to install. Is your dad handy?
No.
Doesn't need to be. It doesn't need to be at all. All you need to be able to do is, like, basically turn the screws on the toilet seat.
There you go.
You don't need any new plumbing. You don't need any electricity. And it's going to help him from flushing his retirement down the toilet, because you save 80% of your toilet paper use. Hello Tushy 3.0 cleans butts like a champ. And it cleans itself with the Smart Spray automatic self-cleaning nozzle. Every Hello Tushy bidet attachment comes with a 60-day risk-free guarantee and a 12-month warranty. And it will not crush your retirement either, Emma, when you buy your dad a Hello Tushy.
You're saying when, like, my...
Your retirement savings.
Okay. Oh, for me.
Yeah.
Jeez, I thought you were making a much darker
No,
point.
What? No. Dad's already one of the millions of happy Hello Tushy customers, if he is. Well, you can get him an upgrade to the 3.0. But I know your father is not that. This would be a great gift. It would be a great gift.
Well,
get your parents into the 21st century. I mean, actually, it's really not the 21st century. They've been using bidets for a long time, but just not in this country. Give the gift of a clean butt. Go to HelloTushy.com/majority for 10% off plus free shipping. This is a special offer for our listeners. Go to HelloTushy.com/majority for 10% off. HelloTushy.com/majority. Folks, I've spoken about this probably too many times over the years, But for an extended period of time in my life, I was not using any deodorant whatsoever because I did not want all the garbage that is in modern day deodorants.
Mm-hmm.
They got like aluminum. They've got, you know, other, I've got, who knows what else is in there. And
some of it's spray. It can't be right.
No, it's not good. And, but you don't have to worry about that and not worry about, smelling bad, because Native has your back. Native cares about the products that you put on your body, and they're all about stopping the stink, the smell, but without
having the stink.
Yeah, exactly. You probably already know about Native's legendary aluminum-free deodorant because I've talked about it, but they also have body wash, toothpaste, and their brand new mineral-based sunscreen. Actually, Mila is loving the body wash.
Oh, nice.
Yep.
I'm in the market for a new body wash.
Oh, this is one, and it's actually one that I can use too. It's a lime and something else. I can't remember what it is, but it's not, it's a smell that I can handle. Now, nice. I of course use my scent-free deodorant from Native, but the broad spectrum SPF 30 sunscreen is lightweight. It absorbs quickly, and you can choose between unscented or coconut and pineapple. And this is actually, it is one of the few, sunscreens that Saul will let me put on his face. He's very he's very angry when I try and put sunscreen on his face.
It's not fun.
But the coconut pineapple, he likes the smell of it.
Oh, there you go.
So it's he doesn't particularly love it when I do it, but it's easier at mm-hmm. least. And it's not heavy. It's not greasy. You can get their deodorant and body wash in amazing scents too, like coconut and vanilla, citrus and herbal musk, lavender and rose, which I would never do, but I understand people like lavender.
I love lavender.
Yeah, I'm allergic. You can build your own personalized product bundles as well. Mix and match three of your favorite scents and keep them on rotation so you get something for every occasion. For me, the big win for Native is I just don't want to put that crap into my system, and it keeps me smelling not stinky.
I haven't noticed that you stink, so there you
Thank
go.
Thank you very much. That's a nice thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
Stay fresh, stay clean with Native by going to nativedo.com/majority report, or you can use the promo code majority report at checkout. You get 20% off your first order. That's nativedo.com/majority report, or just use the promo code majority report at checkout for 20% off your first order. And lastly, regardless of who you are, you should have the right to express yourself freely. Sadly, of course, we got big tech monopoly. They've opted for silencing tactics and censorship, et cetera, et cetera. Well, you can fight back against big tech's control of the internet with ExpressVPN. I don't know if you folks use a VPN. I use one. I use ExpressVPN for a bunch of reasons. One, makes it much harder for them to build a profile on you and sell off your data. It makes it harder for them to track what you're searching. Also gives you the opportunity, you know, if you're looking at a streaming service, you want to use one that is not from this country, you can do that too. All sorts of reasons why you might want to prevent your ISPs, your big tech, all of it. Give yourself some measure of privacy and, frankly, security as you're online. When you use the ExpressVPN app on your computer or phone, you anonymize much of your online presence by hiding your IP address. ExpressVPN encrypts 100% of your network data, and it protects you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's easy to use. Just takes one click to protect all your devices. Super easy. That's why ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired. Doesn't get much better than that, folks. Revoke big tech's right to your data. Secure your internet with the VPN I trust. It's the only one I use for online protection. Visit expressvpn.com/majority. That's expressvpn, expressvpn.com/majority to get 3 extra months free with my exclusive link. That is expressvpn.com/majority right now to learn more. All right. Let's welcome to the program Heather Parton. She is the proprietor of the blog Hullabaloo and also the columnist from Salon.com. Hi, Heather. Great to see you. Heather, can you hear us? Here we go.
I can. I'm sorry about that.
No worries. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
You're obviously with Emma Vigeland.
Hi,
Emma.
So we played a clip to open the show of President Joe Manchin talking about how he is going to make the place work. He's going to make the place work, Heather.
He's
going to fix the Senate single-handedly. He's a little bit concerned about the January 6th thing. He knows that Mitch McConnell knows that he was upset about it.
Oh, well, that makes all the difference.
And they're going to make things work. What, since we're talking about presidents named Joe and how they're going to make things work, let's go back to 13 months ago. And now President Joe Biden, he's a co-president with President Joe Manchin. This is what Joe Biden had to say 13 months ago about what was going to happen with the Republicans.
And the thing will fundamentally change things is with Donald Trump out of the White House. Not a joke. You will see an epiphany occur among many of my Republican friends.
You know what the epiphany turned out to be? We can do this same thing without Donald Trump, just like we did before Donald Trump came in.
Yes.
I mean, the only upside, right? And you and I talked about this. Every time there was an election, Barack Obama would say, if the Republicans lose, the fever's going to break. But if they win, the fever's going to break too, because they're going to have the responsibility. And of course, it didn't happen. Now, at the very least, the good news is, I guess, Joe Biden's not saying that. Joe Biden is sort of taking a different tack, but it doesn't seem to be working at this point, does it?
No, nothing's going to work. As far as changing the Republicans, because, you know, somehow or another, they're going to wake up one morning and decide that, golly, you know, we need to govern here in the country. The democracy is at stake and we've got to do the right thing. That just isn't in there. You know, they've convinced themselves that doing the right thing is doing everything in their power to stop the Democrats from doing anything. That is what they perceive to be doing the right thing in the Congress. Now, in the broader, you know, Republican world, the Trump cult and the rest, they have an even more, you know, nefarious agenda, which is being supported by all those people in the GOP establishment, which is to basically destroy democracy altogether. They're doing that in the states. And part of that is stopping any kind of voting reform or any kind of legislation that might prevent those states from doing that stuff. But yes, you and I talked about this and I wrote about it for Salon this morning. They've been doing this a long time. This is not a Donald Trump initiative. The whole thing about the congressional obstructionism, it isn't even really about Mitch McConnell, although he's been in on it from the very beginning. I wrote about, you know, look, you go back to the 90s and you always had these Democrats from red states. People in those days, it was a guy named David Boren from Oklahoma. There was another one, Bob Kerry from Kansas. I don't know if you remember him. They were playing the Manchin role then. Now, go to the Obama years. We had a guy named Ben Nelson. We had a woman named Blanche Lincoln, also from red states. And then we had the uber Democratic pain in the neck, Joe Lieberman, who had a personal vendetta against the Democratic Party because he felt they didn't treat him right. And they play this role of being these, you know, the so-called mavericks in the party who want to preserve the institution. And they don't want to let all the hippies and the crazies and the left-wing extremists and Antifa and whoever else they've got on their list of left-wing enemies. They don't want to let them have their way. So they work with the Republicans to do this. And there's a structural element to this. The U.S. Senate is an undemocratic institution. And it was set up as an undemocratic institution. Originally, back the founders set it up that people didn't even vote for the members of the Senate. It was voted for in the state legislatures. So it's undemocratic, particularly in times of political polarization, as we are now, as we were before the Civil War, when you have this preponderance of rural red states that we call them now, but they're conservative states, that outweigh the majority of the people. We see that play out in the Electoral College. We're seeing it play out in the U.S. Senate over the last 20 years as the parties have polarized and the red states have minoritarian clout. The filibuster will help. Getting rid of the filibuster will help because that is an undemocratic tool that's been, it's a relic of Jim Crow. But that's not going to solve this problem because the U.S. Senate, as long as it is run by people who believe that their job is to stop anything the other side wants to do, it is a gridlocked, do nothing, completely useless institution for everything but, the direst emergency and maybe passing omnibus budget bills that have to be passed. Other than that, you can forget any kind of legislation because they've just decided that this is just, it's a game that they're going to play to stop the other side. So we're seeing that play out now. And where Joe Biden lands on that, I honestly don't know because he did seem to believe that, I don't know what, he didn't even think it was 1991. I think he thought it was 1971, when he was saying that. And so, he seems to have been enlightened a bit. But what difference does that make? Because unless he can bring in Joe Manchin like Lyndon Johnson used to do and bring them in and, basically twist their arms to make them do his will, I don't know what will work with Joe Manchin. Do you?
Well, that's really the problem here, right? And we'll get into what appears to be the strategy, but I don't see what kind of leverage Joe Biden has, or frankly, any Democrat has with Joe Manchin. Joe Biden's approval rating has been between something like, 52 and 55% nationally. It is 25% in West Virginia. It has not budged an inch since he's become president. The stimulus, all the payments, nothing. None of it. It's narrowed, it crept up to 25%, through the campaign. They liked him a little bit more, but he has no leverage. It's not like, I think we said this maybe, a couple of weeks ago. The one thing that it seems like the Democrats could do for Joe Manchin is, we're going to send AOC to occupy your office for like a couple of days and have a bunch of protesters. And Manchin might be like, that actually would help me. That might actually get me, all points if, and that's about it. Like, I honestly think that getting Democrats upset at him has value to him.
Of course.
And so it's tough to understand the leverage. So let's turn a little bit to this piece that came out in the Daily Beast. Chuck Schumer had written a letter, I guess it was about a week and a half ago, sort of outlining this thing. But they've started, the Daily Beast was teasing it out in this story about, setting up June as the month in which Democrats lose and they're going to enjoy, they're cheering for a month of Senate failure is what the title was. But before we talk about this, I want to talk about a piece that I saw on the Hill today, too. You'll recall about 2 weeks ago, there was Schumer started to meet with the parliamentarian. And the parliamentarian some time ago, a couple months ago, had supposedly issued some ruling that there could be multiple reconciliation bills beyond. Well, apparently that's not the case. Mm-hmm. She clarified, and there can only be two more. One in this fiscal year, and then one in the fiscal year starting April of 2022. Now, once you start getting into April of 2022, you're only 4 months out from 6 months out from the midterm elections, and then you're starting to freak out. That's a tough time to pass something because they're just cowardly.
Mm-hmm.
They now realize they only have one reconciliation bill, and that may explain why Joe Biden is so desperate to come up with even a tiny package with the Republicans, because you do a tiny package with them because you're going to need to do more in this one reconciliation if it becomes clear that Joe Manchin is not going to vote for any type of filibuster reform. Never mind like all the non-dollar stuff you need filibuster to do stuff like the voting rights and stuff like this. But and so just with that information, characterize what it appears to be Chuck Schumer's strategy here for the month of June.
Well, it's pretty obvious, because even in the Daily Beast article, they quoted, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 Democrats. You know, when the headline said they're cheering on a month of failure, that's true. That's literally true. All these Democrats, including the new senator from California, Padilla, there were a bunch of them in there saying, this is great. What we need to do is put all these bills to a vote. We've got to make them, you know, make the American people see what they are. And then if they fail because the Republicans filibuster one right after the other, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, let's not forget her, because she's part of this too. Maybe more the Joe Lieberman of this era rather than the, what you might call the Bob Kerry of this era, or not even him, I guess more like Ben Nelson. And, you know, they're saying that the idea behind it is to make Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and any of the other hidden anti-filibuster reform Democrats. And, you know, there are some. I have no doubt that there are some, you know, semi-conservative Democrats out there who just don't want to say they want to preserve the filibuster. They're letting Manchin and Sinema take the heat for it. But these Democrats seem to believe that if they just show how obstructionist the Republicans are being, that Manchin will have a change of heart, and he will decide that he needs to reform the filibuster after all. And there's also a second part of this too, which is that Schumer did add an addendum to that when he was talking about it in the article and saying, and if they don't, well, then we have something to run against them in 2022, which kind of, I'm going ding, ding, ding. Okay, good. You know, I guess that's what we're really doing here, because I see no evidence that Joe Manchin is going to change his mind. I mean, maybe this is a grand kabuki dance and they are all in on it. They've sat down in meetings. They've strategized it all out. Okay, Joe and Kyrsten, you go do your thing and pretend like you really care, and everybody else do this, and Biden, you do that. Maybe that's what they've done, but that would not be the Democratic Party I'm familiar with. I think it's always wise to take people at their word when you see them saying something. Actually believe that 99% of the time they're actually saying the truth in these situations. And I think that they may believe that they can change Joe Manchin's mind, but I just absolutely don't see any evidence of it. Last night he gave an interview to a couple of people. I think it was Manu Raju on CNN and Garrett Graff. And he said, no, I'm not, I see no reason to change the filibuster. Yes, what McConnell did on the January 6th commission was totally political. I was very disappointed in them. I was very disappointed. He was really kind of upset about that. On the other hand, he sees no reason to get rid of the filibuster and says that he will not put this infrastructure bill through reconciliation, no matter what. He thinks they can get a bill. I mean, I guess maybe a dollar or two would be fine with him. Whatever he can get and call it bipartisan and say it's a win is what he wants to do. And that's that. So what we're looking at here, I mean, unless something really fundamental changes in this whole dynamic, we're looking at a stalled out Democratic agenda. Unless they do this one reconciliation bill. And remember, reconciliation requires 50 votes. So if they don't have Manchin on board and Sinema on board with the big reconciliation bill that maybe Biden has in mind down the road, if they don't have him on board for that, that doesn't happen either. So, I mean, our problem is not just the filibuster. Our problem is that we have Democrats who are not really on board with the Democratic agenda. And, you know, it's simple, right? I mean, we have these people who just don't want to do it. And they're refusing to admit that the Republicans are, that's fine with them, that they're actually being useful idiots for the Republican Party. And I don't know how to fix that. You know, the piece I wrote for Salon today was on this subject. And at the end of it, I'm just kind of, I was sitting there writing it and I'm going, what do you do about this? I mean, I don't honestly know. I mean, there's that structural problem with the Senate and the Electoral College, frankly, and gerrymandering in the House. We've got the states out there doing this stuff, which is basically trying to nullify Democratic votes and subvert the actual election process. I don't know what happens. I mean, any ideas? Because I'm kind of stymied on this.
Well, I'm not necessarily, you know, convinced that Manchin, if this, you know, the most optimistic take about what's happening with Biden right now is that he's essentially trying to demonstrate to Joe Manchin that the Republicans won't agree to anything, even after cutting the $2.2 trillion proposal to $1 trillion and, like, creating a corporate tax floor of 15% as opposed to the tax increase, which is, you know, maddening, but... if that's some sort of exercise, I'm on board. But what worries me more than even Manchin, because Manchin before was saying, oh, I'm down for $4 trillion in infrastructure. Right. Like, yeah, that could have been a lie. But I think infrastructure is a decent issue for him when it comes to, you know, bringing significant, I think, not prosperity, but infrastructure to his state. The person that's worrying me most right now is Joe Biden, like with these reports that he's calling Larry Summers and saying, why are you criticizing me? And thinking that that's somebody who is going to give him sound advice in any way, shape or form. And I'm when you read about the kind of way Biden leads, which is just having all of these opinions and taking a really long time to make a choice, I'm concerned that he's kind of regressing into back to what we saw, his traditional mode, and these Larry Summers stories percolating. It's concerning me.
I'm not necessarily a counterpoint to that, but he did say the other day that was interesting. This is and reportedly that conversation he had with Summers was like 6 weeks ago. Maybe there's been more since then. I don't know why it's coming out now, because maybe there's somebody in the White House who feels like Summers is having an outsized
influence,
which I wouldn't doubt. He did say, I guess it was just, what was it, a week ago? I don't know. I had time. I have no ability anymore, where he said, look, it's OK for wages to go up. Which is a big deal. I mean, it's a big deal insofar as, you know, we have had an establishment in this country who has been, you know, they'll talk about jobs, but when it comes to wages, they're like, whoa. If we start to see inflation creep up, and everybody should understand, when they start panicking about inflation, what they're also panicking about is wages going up.
Absolutely.
And so the boogeyman is out there. He's like, it's going to cost you a lot for gas. It's going to cost you a lot for food. What they're really worried about is it's going to cost a lot for labor. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing some of that now because, to a certain extent, people are like, they're more reluctant to go back to work still, in part because, I mean, I know just in my own you know, life, I don't have childcare, the same type of childcare I had pre-COVID. I've gotten disconnected from, you know, the stable of babysitters that we had, you know, that we would call on. Oh, you know, Janet can't do it. Whatever, we'll do. You know, we'll get Bill. We don't have the stable of babysitters anymore. We don't have the same childcare situations. People after, you know, a year and a half are going like, I'm not going back into that crappy job I had. I'm worried about COVID. Well, the thing is that, you know, a lot of businesses, I think, are trying to ramp up and go from zero to 60 because all of a sudden, you know, this came much quicker, I think, than anybody thought. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, when four months ago when Joe Biden was saying, like, you know, I want to get 70% vaccination by July 4th. You know, I want us to be able to go out and go to July 4th. Well, here it is, the beginning of June, and in the hardest hit places in the country, we've been basically, you know, half mask off for 2 or 3 weeks. This is moving quicker than I think a lot of people anticipate. Mm-hmm. But so, you know, I don't know if Joe Biden's even operating with a plan right now, but I do think that this latest sort of machination by the parliamentarian. Now, of course, the other thing that is just sort of just incredibly frustrating is that, Digby, you remember the Republicans fired the parliamentarian.
I know.
And now would have been the time to fire the parliamentarian right now when no one's paying attention.
Yep.
You know, like, you can fire the parliamentarian five times and no one's going to be reporting on it, you know, except for like in The Hill, which the only people that read The Hill are like the three of us. And,
I don't even read it that much.
Right. And so, you know, the Democrats are sort of like backing into this on some level. Now, one of the things that, Digby, in some of our conversations, we have speculated that maybe this month of losing in June is also about, I mean, it's clearly performative. Like you said, you know, Chuck Schumer to be able to go and run on what the Republicans are, and no one's going to care. I'm sorry. This is just sort of silly.
It's ridiculous.
It is a complete misreading of what's going on with you know, like, I imagine there was an era of American politics where people were voting on these type of things. And it might be important to maybe the base of the Democratic Party to see Democrats make an effort on this, and it's good. And it also sort of puts them on the record. But I also think that what we're watching is possibly a clearing of the decks of all the bills that Joe Manchin has an issue with, let's say. So Joe Manchin's already said, I don't like S1. That goes too far, probably because there's provisions in there that make you reveal where you're getting your money from, and ethics provisions. I don't know, but he said he's more interested in the John Lewis voting bill, which is more narrowly tailored to voting, as opposed to sort of like good government that is in S1. The Equality Act, he's also a little nervous about. And that also happens to be one that they're going to be putting up in June. So you let Joe Manchin avoid taking the hard votes on these bills because they're all going to die by the hand of the filibuster. The actual vote on the bill is never going to happen.
Right.
He's going to vote for the motion to proceed. He's not going to have to vote on these bills that he doesn't want to vote against. But he also is not going to have to vote for them. And then maybe June clears out all the stuff that Joe Manchin has an issue with. And I would say maybe they throw in, like, maybe Chuck Schumer's going around going like, what vote don't you want to take, guys?
Right.
Everybody gets to say, like, well, I don't want to vote for the raising of the taxes, and I don't want to vote for, the PRO Act, although I noticed that's not on the docket, but maybe it will be. And they're going to use this as a way of getting all of the possible legislation that Democrats, specific ones are like, I don't want to vote on that one. I don't want to vote on this one. Great. Let's put it all up there. We'll let the Republicans obstruct it. We will use the filibuster what it really is for, which is to prevent people from taking tough votes. And then we'll see what happens. I don't know. I mean, I'm just, you know, it's conjecture here, but it's really hard to figure out, like, you know, I want to be able to tell people listening to us, say, like, call your senator and pressure them to do this, or there needs to be organizing, or people need to start to protest out in front of Joe Manchin's house. And I don't know what would work.
Well, I mean, that's where I'm at. I don't know. This dynamic is just so incredibly difficult when you have, I mean, first of all, let's not let the Republicans off the hook here. I mean, you've got Republicans like, you know, Susan Collins and Mitt Romney and all the other very, very concerned, furrowed-browed Republicans who they're just falling in line completely behind Mitch McConnell. There's, I mean, they make a few little, you know, gestures one way or the other. You've got Shelley Moore Capito up at the White House, basically negotiating, you know, as a proxy for Joe Manchin. She's the other West Virginia. So, I mean, that's the negotiations going on between Biden and West Virginia, basically, and they're sort of working in tandem. So, you know, essentially, though, there's no such thing as any kind of bipartisan cooperation. So this is why we fall on the Democrats here to do what they have the power to do and which they are not doing. The first being what you just mentioned, the firing of the parliamentarian, which the Republicans did it. And we didn't even blink when it happened. I mean, do you remember? I remember it because I was paying attention, but they just said, oh, well, we don't like what she said, or he said. I don't remember if it was a man or a woman, but he said, we don't like what she said, so we just fired him. And they got another one in who did what they wanted. They put in a parliamentarian who agreed to do what they wanted to do. And nobody blinked an eye. And that was a long time ago. That was 20 years ago that they did that. And that was in the midst. I mean, it's not like there was no political polarization at the time. We'd just gone through a hairy election in 2000, which most Democrats felt was unfair, undemocratic, and basically, you know, it was a very dubious result, let's put it that way. So, you know, it wasn't like there was no, you know, political churning going on, but they just did it. And we all sat there and went, well, I guess you can do that. Who knew, you know? And the Democrats could do that too. They're not doing that. They're not eliminating the filibuster, at least not yet, or reforming it or whatever they want to call it. They're talking about it a lot, but that's not getting us anywhere. So I don't actually know what the plan is beyond what I think. It's that little clue that Schumer said, well, if it doesn't work, we'll run against him in 2022. I mean, it suggests to me that is, you know, sort of plan B here.
And
kill the agenda, and then we'll run against them for killing the agenda. And I just, you know, to me, that just, imagine what the Republicans are going to be running on, running against them.
It sort of explains Joe Biden's comment this past weekend, where he was like, you can't blame me.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Joe doing anything. Well, right. You know, I got a Republican Senate that's and I got two Democrats who are voting with Republicans all the time. I mean, it already sounds like it's a CYA situation here. And that's what Schumer's doing, too. And look, let's be clear. There's a lot more to be gained by going after Chuck Schumer than there is Joe Manchin at this point. Because Chuck Schumer, he's the one who would fire the parliamentarian. You know, he is the one who would basically push for that. And and to a certain extent, the parliamentarian is helping Chuck Schumer with his CYA project, right?
Yeah.
I can't do it because the parliamentarian. Well, we all know you can fire the parliamentarian. We know that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
That person's just an advisor. They don't, they're meaningless. And so, you know, maybe the idea is like, you know, more pressure on Chuck Schumer. There were hopes that there would be, you know, somebody who could scare Chuck Schumer, you know, in a primary election. That person does not seem to have materialized in New York. And I think a lot of the stuff that we saw with Schumer over the past, like, 12 months, you know, prior to like the past couple of months, was a function of that, where he was getting out there talking a little more, you know, like, I'm going to do a press conference with Elizabeth Warren on $50,000. I mean,
mm-hmm. Where's that, by the way?
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, the big question is, you know, if all of this falls apart, if the loser palooza that they're going to be pulling in, you know, ends up being just a loser palooza that, like, well, we could have done all these things if you had given us, like, what seats, you know, are the Democrats going to get in the Senate in 2022? Then we could have passed it. I mean, I think, you know, maybe Joe Biden starts, you know, using the pen a little bit more for executive orders. But I don't know. I don't see any indication of that. And there doesn't seem to be a plan here. It just seems like they there was no strategy that was being applied here beyond we need to get this COVID relief bill out there. And then they're like, and then let's see what happens. But they're just assessing. They're not doing anything, it feels like.
Well, I mean, and this is, you know, as I you know, wrote in my piece this morning, this is not new. It's been going on for at least 30 years. Ever since the, you know, all the old, you know, the old lions of the Senate and the House that were the Southern Democrats, when they finally, you know, retired or shuffled off their mortal coil, the two parties completely realigned over the last 30 years so that it's now this, you know, it's red state, blue state. There are no liberal Republicans anymore. There aren't even any moderate Republicans. Not really. I mean, I guess you can call a handful of them. Certainly not enough to beat a filibuster, that's for sure. And, you know, you have these two parties that are polarized. You have had this dynamic. It's not new. And Joe Manchin didn't invent it. He's playing a role that is an existing role in the Democratic Party and has been for a long time. Look at Obamacare. When they started the negotiations for Obamacare, which they wasted a whole lot of time trying to get Republicans on board, and they made tremendous, tremendous concessions to get them on board. They had 60 votes in the Senate. They had enough to beat a filibuster. Now, Teddy Kennedy, unfortunately, passed away in the middle of all that before the vote was taken. Bad idea again. They should have rushed that vote so that they had the 60 to beat the filibuster, but they didn't do that. Had a new election. You remember the whole horror there. They ended up, but they had 59 senators and they still couldn't get the thing done because no Republicans would vote for it. And they ended up having to put Obamacare through reconciliation. And that vote did not include a whole bunch of Democrats. A bunch of Democrats voted no on Obamacare. And a lot of them lost their seats in 2010, which has traumatized the whole party because, oh, no, that was just the worst thing that could have happened. And this dynamic just continues over and over again. The Democrats have never figured out how to deal with this. They don't know how to deal with it. And, I, you know, I'm at a point where I honestly think that there has to be some kind of serious arm twisting. People like Joe Manchin have things that they care about. They have things that they want done for their state. Now, I know right now in a 50-50 Senate, they're worried that Joe will jump ship and join the Republicans. He's not said he would do anything like that. In fact, I think the more likely one is Kyrsten Sinema. She's posing for pictures on Twitter with John Cornyn and giving big lectures about how the filibuster is a, you know, it's a beautiful thing to preserve democracy, et cetera, et cetera. I could see her actually jumping to the Republicans because she's a shapeshifter from what she started off as a Green Party, you know, left-wing activist 10 years ago. So she's not afraid to change her stripes. But that's what they're afraid of at this point, of putting too much pressure on these people because they're afraid. But that's a 50-50 Senate. And perhaps the next time we have a 52 majority, they'll be more motivated to try and change this. But this is a huge, huge problem. And I don't think we're facing yet the essential fundamental challenge we have before us. And that is when you have no such thing as bipartisanship, it just does not exist. It's gone. There's nothing unless there's an emergency or some good reason. I mean, they can't even name post offices anymore on a bipartisan basis. I mean, this is Mitch McConnell, the gravedigger of democracy, as he was dubbed in the New York Review of Books, has determined that this is the path to power for Republicans. And it is. It has worked for them in the past. And I have no reason to believe it won't work for them again in 2022. We are in the same, it's like Groundhog Day here. You know, and we all think it's new because of Donald Trump and because they've gone crazy and there's mass hysteria on the right and there's the threat of insurrection and violence, which, by the way, has also always been underlying all of this. I mean, the worst domestic terrorist attack in history happened in the 90s when Tim McVeigh blew up the Oklahoma federal building. You know, so this is not, that's also been part of this. I know I sound like an old person kind of saying, well, nothing new under the sun, but I mean, it's true. This has been ongoing. And I see, you know, Loserpalooza, which I think is now the official name of this particular gambit, Loserpalooza I just don't see it. I just don't see how this works out. I mean, unless, as I said, if it's a big kabuki game and they're all in on it and this is what they've decided, they're going to, you know, they've mapped it all out, which would be truly amazing because Democrats don't actually have plans. I'm not hopeful. And that means the end of the Biden agenda, basically. I mean, what happens then?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's accurate. And I think, you know, I mean, fortunately, it's June now. So if we really want to delude ourselves that Chuck Schumer's got a master plan that he's, you know, sitting at a massive whiteboard in his office where he's like, we're going to lose this one. We're going to lose this one. And then we're going to switch. And I've checked with everybody and we're all ready. We're synchronized. No, at the very least, we won't have to delude ourselves for more than 30 days, right?
And the only thing seemingly keeping the infrastructure talks from caving into like this measly nothingness is the Republican extremism. If they hold the line as Biden keeps inching and or not inching, but like making leaps towards their figure, then okay, we still have a shot at this infrastructure package not being completely diluted.
Well, that's, you know, but that is a concern for me too, because the point that when Heather was saying that, you know, Capetto is there negotiating on behalf of West Virginia and right. Manchin, I'm not convinced that Biden isn't negotiating with Manchin. I mean, that's what's going on here. The pretense is he's negotiating with the Republicans. But I think what he's also doing is trying to get down to a number that Manchin is supportive of in this thing. And so that, like, because he's revealing, he's going out there and he's going like, you know, I mean, you're telegraphing to the entire, to everybody, what you're willing to take in terms of counteroffer, right? Like, you know, it's like, I'm trying to sell you this pen for 10 bucks. Emma, here's this pen for 10 bucks. And I just go, Heather, I'll sell you this for $5. Yeah. And I go back over to Emma and I'm like, you know, 10 bucks. You're like, you're going to sell it for five. I'll take
that. Manchin would have said, I would buy that pen for $15. That's what he said.
I know.
These negotiations.
I know it. I know it. And yeah. So, I don't see how the Democrats are. I don't see this as teeing them up for 2022, and I don't see it as. I mean, maybe they will, but you know, and frankly, like, it is a very hard situation because I don't know where the leverage is here. I really don't know where the leverage is, and that is super super frustrating. And you know, and then the other point to this is that, you know, we've got a Republican Party where there seems to be at least some significant portion of it thinks that Donald Trump is going to be installed the president in at the end of August. I don't know if that's because he's going on vacation for a couple of weeks or something, and they want to wait until he's back from like whatever it is, last tour. But this is, you know, but there's a substantial portion of the country that seems to believe this, and
including Donald Trump, apparently. You know, evidently he thinks, and there, no, by the way, this is an interesting little side note that I hadn't heard before. He also thinks that Democratic senators, David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler, and a couple of other ones, I don't know who the other ones are also going to be reinstated. That the whole election's going to be, you know, any losses in the election are going to be overturned, and they're going to be reinstated into the Senate as well. So maybe that's it. They're all holding out so they can take the majority in August, and Trump will be back in the White House, and everything, you know, we'll have the status quo again, which is, you know, of course, totally possible.
I mean, it is, it just, it's a distressing situation, frankly. And I don't know. You know, I mean, I think like the best I think the progressives can do right now is, you know, pressure folks like Schumer, pressure, you know, to the folks who actually have the ability to do something, like even fire the parliamentarian you know, get another couple of reconciliation opportunities. Do it two or three times, you know, fashion two.
They can get Manchin on board. They need 50 votes.
Yeah. And
or maybe work on Romney, or maybe work on you know, I don't know, Susan Collins or somebody to vote for reconciliation. I don't actually know. And of course, the big one here is the voting rights bills. There are two of them, one of which Manchin has suggested that he might be willing to vote for, whether he'd blow up the filibuster for it. There's no evidence that he will, because voting rights bills have to be bipartisan, which may be the most fatuous thing the man has ever said. And that's saying something, because he says a lot of fatuous nonsense over and over again. But that one, I'm going, really, you honestly think that voting rights bills are going to be bipartisan? What planet are you from?
Well, he's not from planet Texas. He's not from planet Georgia. He's not from planet Wisconsin. He's
Florida.
Not from planet Florida. Because in those planets, the bills are not bipartisan.
Right. Right. I mean, it's insane. And, you know, and in fact, it kind of occurs to me as we're sitting here talking about it, I wonder what is going on in the states, on the Democratic Party in the states. I mean, we do ostensibly have individual parties in these places like Arizona and Wisconsin. The true threats here to the voting rights are in places like Wisconsin, Texas, Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Arizona, you know, the usual suspects in the sort of purple states. And that, I wonder whether or not there is activity there that might be a place where pressure can be put on Republicans in those legislatures. I mean, they're as right wing as it gets, but that's where the action is. That's where this voting, I mean, it's more than vote suppression. It is like I put it before, it's Democratic vote nullification is what they're looking for. And electoral system subversion, which means they're going to, you know, overturn elections, run these audits, do all this kind of crazy stuff. And in the process, of course, reduce anybody's belief in the system at all. I mean, none of us, right wing, left wing, in the middle, are going to look at our elections after they're done with it and go, wow, you know, that works pretty well. I mean, we're going to be just, you know, there will be no longer any faith in the system. And of course, that's the objective. And so maybe there's some work being done in the states that I'm unaware of, that these parties, I mean, I know they're out there going, this is crazy. These people are nuts. We don't know, you know, but is there anything specifically, you know, any kind of a specific plan? Because honestly, I just, you know, they were begging in Texas when they walked out the other day and stopped that bill temporarily, probably, from passing. They were out there on the microphones going, Washington, where are you? We need you. You know, you have to pass these bills. I don't think Joe Manchin heard that or cared. Sinema didn't seem to. And she's right in the heart of this whole problem. She's in Arizona where they're doing it right before our eyes. And she is still out there going, yeah, well, you know, that filibuster is very important. So, you know, Washington, I don't know if it's going to rescue us on this. I don't feel very confident that that's going to happen. And I'm not sure that the bills are going to address the problem directly anyway. They're important for a million reasons, but are they going to be able to stop this? Because I don't know that they will. So, you know, this is a really thorny problem, really, really thorny, and it's getting worse every day. They've gone crazy on the right, and the Democrats are once again seem flummoxed in the face of Republican extremism. You know, everything old is new again.
We should also add, you know, Arizona, another place where Biden's favorability is under 50%.
Yeah.
I think he's at 45%, maybe favorable in Arizona. So it's, you know, I've seen people who say, you know, like Biden's got to flex his muscle. Well, in certain areas, he's a little bit weak.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not even talking from a policy standpoint. I'm just talking strictly where his political leverage is. It's not
a good way to bodybuild is to pass a significant infrastructure bill that has wide support throughout the
country. Yeah, I mean, I think it's the only thing I can imagine as to why it's that either they believe they got to pass this by mid-July, I think, as they have said in the past, and that they only need 4 or 5 weeks to get this thing done through reconciliation, or 3 weeks, and that's the way it's going to go. Or maybe just, I don't know, Biden's running out the clock. I just don't understand why they're continuing on with these. It was supposed to end at Memorial Day. It didn't. If when we come back from the weekend and Capetto and Biden, I don't know what they could agree on. I don't even know what she's bringing to the table.
Like less and less money. She's bringing less and less money. Now, it is possible. I mean, it occurs to me. I mean, I think Emma's right that they are banking on the infrastructure bill to be this, you know, big win, whether it's through reconciliation or through some kind of bipartisan agreement, which may consist of being, I mean, maybe what we're really looking at here is the Republican deal. $200 billion added to the, what is it, $700 billion, you know, whatever, that they, you know, that's what the ending bill will be. It's, you know, bipartisan or Manchin agrees to reconciliation, and that's that.
All right.
And that's what it is.
We got to take a quick break. Digby, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for having me, Sam.
All right, quick break, and then we'll be back. We got a couple of seconds. We'll wrap it up. So maybe we'll see. Maybe on Monday, Joe Biden will say we gave it a good try, man, and it's over. And so we will get on to the business of seeing where we go with reconciliation. Joe Manchin's going to have to say yes to something at one point, I think. Maybe. We'll see. But in the meantime, if you are leaving us and you're watching us on Peacock,
have a wonderful weekend.
Well said. We'll see you then. And if you are watching us on any of the other multitude of platforms that we, you could be listening to audio streaming, you could be listening by a podcast hours from the very moment that I'm saying these words, or maybe you're seeing us on YouTube.
The Discord,
maybe. Why did you say that? Like you were just like,
I doubted
like walking
myself
onto like some type of like pond rope that was like frozen. You weren't sure. It was,
well, we don't technically stream to the Discord.
This is what I was.
Surprise.
Yeah, I didn't get it.
And we are, hopefully we'll be talking to Andrew Callahan in just a moment, but haven't caught up with him yet. Let's play this clip. So we're all wondering the, you know, the election is going to be reversed in August, which is always like the typical time that you have elections in the United States reversed. I mean, to a certain extent, this has got to be about like, you know, Trump trying to recapture the fire. He shut down his blog after 25 days.
I think it was 29. Please give him credit.
29 days of blogging. Maybe he got tired of blogging, but maybe it was also like nobody's reading it, which nobody was reading.
That's what the reporting was. He was frustrated that the blog didn't have.
Yeah. How come nobody's reading?
It's no hullabaloo, I got to say.
Well, there's a good argument. What happens in terms of like deplatforming? Shout out to Twitch. Here is Lara Trump on Fox and Friends. Apparently she's out of the loop.
Oh. Carolina, what about this story that President Trump is thinking that he's going to be placed into office in August? Is that true? Has he mentioned that to you? Because I think 24 hours a day, other networks are running with that story.
Well, I think you should take a look at who those networks are and who is pushing that story out. As far as I know, there are no plans for Donald Trump to be in the White House in August. Maybe there's something I don't know, Brian, but no, I think that is a lot of folks getting a little worked up about something just because maybe there wasn't enough pushback, from the Republican side. So, no, I have not heard any plans for Donald Trump to be installed in the White House in August.
You just blew up all their programming for the next 72 hours.
Laura, so thanks. Sorry, guys.
It's okay.
No, she doesn't know anything. She's not in the know. She's the wife of Eric, right? I mean, please.
Eric's not in on it.
Eric's not in on the plans. He's got a tight circle of Sidney Powell, Rudy Giuliani, and then maybe Don Jr. can come in all coked out and such.
I will bet you. I don't know what we could bet, but I will bet you, I don't know, the rest of those almonds that you got over there.
It's a very small amount. Look at this, guys.
Yeah, well, I'm not going full hog here, but that you noticed that when she responded, there are no plans for Donald Trump to be installed in August. And when she said it a second time, there are no plans for Donald Trump to be installed in August. Whatever it's going to be on 8chan, 4chan, wherever they're doing the Q these days.
Mm-hmm. Now it's B, apparently.
B? Q has been replaced with B?
I'm derailing your train of thought. I'll say this in a little bit.
I'm quite convinced what they're going to say is, of course not. Whatever the mechanism happens in August, he gets installed in September. Mm-hmm. That's why she didn't say. She could have said, there are no plans for Donald Trump to be installed into the presidency. Or she could have said something like, well, that's ridiculous. He lost the election.
Yes.
Right? Like, that's one way of, if you wanted to really didn't want that speculation out there, you'd say, you know, that's ridiculous. He didn't win the election. He's not the president. He may run again in 2024. But no, she didn't do that. She just said, not going to be installed in August.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, she played it both ways there. But I think what they're going to try to do is they're going to keep pushing the deadline for his installation, implantation into the White House, into the Oval Office, into, you know, September, November 2022. They're going to keep riding that wave through the midterms, just to like keep him relevant. And also, I mean, Mitch McConnell's like, sure, if we're gonna stir up some of this Q energy, I'm all for it.
Yeah, they'll use it, no doubt. You lose it or use it or lose it is basically what it comes down to. All right,
especially if he doesn't have a Twitter account.
Yeah, I think we'll see. All right, let's keep on with the show. I guess we should, you know what, head into the fun half.
Sure.
Let's do that. We will take some phone calls. Hopefully we'll have Andrew Callahan later, but right now we seem to be having some technical difficulties in that regard. We'll take a quick break, head into the fun half. The number is 646-257-3920. We will take your IMs and your phone calls, and we will see you in just a moment. Just pitch, you should become a member of the show.
Oh.
Why don't you remind me? Folks, in addition to hitting the subscribe and like button on YouTube, or giving us
a share
on Twitch, become a member of this program. Your support makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Don't forget also justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. Share our interviews, our clips, whatever it is. All of it helps. And give us a review on iTunes. Why not?
All of it's poggers.
All of it's poggers. It's all pogging away. Don't forget, check out Nomi's show, youtube.com/TheNomiKeyShow.
It is Femme Friday.
It is Femme Friday. Check that out. Also, Matt, what's happening in the Matt Leckian entertainment universe?
Yeah, I did a deep dive into an old Crowder segment from April of last year where he's saying that all the COVID deaths being recorded were actually flu deaths, just miscategorized. So we revisited how sort of early COVID denial narratives set in. And also Kurt Hackbarth of Jacobin came on to talk about AMLO and Mexico's upcoming elections, which are the biggest in that country's history. So, yeah, some discussion on Mexican democracy last night. Patreon.com/LeftReckoning. But go check out the YouTube show, folks.
Check it out. We will see you in the fun half. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous. You're a little bit upset. You're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Rand Paul.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
That guy might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
Do.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.